I'm Dr. Tim Witham. I'm a neurosurgeon here at Johns Hopkins in the spine division. My clinical interests and research interests are related to the treatment of degenerative spinal conditions involving the lumbar and the cervical spine primarily.
In your training then, this type of surgery, interventions for low back pain, have undergone a lot of transition. Would you talk about some of that? Because surgery these days seems like it's a whole lot less invasive, and I'll even call it brutal, than it used to be.
We have come up with options that are less invasive. As new technologies develop, we also have to be somewhat skeptical of those technologies, and we really have to put them through a rigorous evaluation process. And sometimes new technologies hit the media and patients sort of get very excited about it, when in reality, some of the newer treatments aren't always applicable. As time goes by, we then learn which patients may be candidates for certain newer treatments. And an example of that would be the artificial disc, which we are doing here at Johns Hopkins in a selected group of patients, but it's not a treatment option that can be applied to every single patient with pain. And in fact, when some of these new treatments develop, I think that the technology can be used in a way that is detrimental to the patient's actual situation if it's not used in the right clinical setting.
Do you mind describing a little more about that, especially with regard to the artificial disc and anything else that you would regard as a new technology?
Specifically with regard to the artificial disc, one of the key features of that is that we can't put that particular type of device in a patient that's 75 years old who has very advanced degeneration of the joints. The artificial disc is used to just replace the disc, which is one part of the motion segment of the spine. There are also other joints called the facet joints that have to be functioning properly to allow for the disc to work properly. If the artificial disc is placed in a patient that has advanced degeneration of the facet joints, then unfortunately that disc could have a detrimental impact on that patient.
So would you say that it's really important when people hear about these sexy new technologies that they ought to come to a place where there's a lot of expertise in order to evaluate them properly?
I completely agree with that statement. There are physicians that see a new technology and are very eager to try it out on their patients almost in an experimental setting, and the patients really don't realize that at the time.
How can you tell who is suitable for a less invasive approach?
It has to do with the level of the surgery. There are certain levels in the spine that are better through a minimally invasive approach and are less risky. For example, problems with discs in the upper lumbar region tend to be better addressed through minimally invasive techniques. Unfortunately, disc degeneration in the upper lumbar spine is less common than the lower areas of the lumbar spine, like at L4-5 and L5-S1, where I think it's a lot harder to approach those levels through a minimally invasive approach.
So once again, this careful evaluation is really important.
I think it's the key, because no two patients are the same when it comes to low back pain.
What's your thought about low back pain just sort of globally? Maybe you could describe why it happens in most people.
The reason that it happens in most people is we were not really designed anatomically to walk on two legs, and we're still in an evolutionary process. And I think that's why low back pain is so common. The other issue that really comes into play now, and I'm seeing a lot more patients who are older and older, and because the technologies have improved, we are now operating for low back pain on patients that are much older than they used to be. Life expectancy in general has increased. What I refer to it as is patients who are outliving their bone structure. 40, 50 years ago, maybe the life expectancy was 60, and we're now seeing, you know, very commonly patients who are 80, even as old as 85 years old, coming to the clinic to have their back pain evaluated. That also creates additional challenges in terms of how do you deal with the aging spine from the perspective of the bone quality, because as all of us age, our bone density decreases. And so I am now routinely evaluating the bone mineral density of patients in their 70s and 80s before I consider a spinal procedure on them.
If you find that their bone mineral density is compromised, can you use bisphosphonates such as Fosamax and or calcium supplements to kind of beef them up previous to surgery?
Absolutely. And as it turns out, right now, the most common thing that I'm seeing is a vitamin D deficiency. And there's been a lot of press about that recently. But it's amazing to me how many people are actually vitamin D deficient. And we can boost vitamin D levels within typically 6 to 12 weeks. Vitamin D, as it turns out, is critical to bone healing. And if we're doing a procedure on the spine that requires bone healing with regard to a fusion, it's really critical that the vitamin D level be in a range that can allow for that bone healing. Also, addressing the issue of bone density in general, yes, we can provide supplements to try to strengthen the bones prior to surgery. The bisphosphonates are an option. I will typically work closely with an endocrinologist to assist me with that. But there's also a newer drug available called Forteo, which is also one of the only medications that will directly build bone up. The bisphosphonates and other types of medications used to treat osteoporosis really prevent the breakdown of bone, but Forteo is the only medication that will actually build new bone. And so I have put patients on Forteo prior to extensive spinal surgery to try to boost their bone quality.
I would assume also that they need to stay on the supplementation and these medications after surgery.
They do, and it's something that needs to be followed typically by an endocrinologist. The other thing that's important is just knowing somebody has poor bone quality will allow us to take measures as well with the techniques that we use to do the surgery. Sometimes we'll place special types of instrumentation that help to deal with weak bone. Sometimes we'll use cement augmentation procedures to also try to enhance the ability of the hardware to be effective in stabilizing the spine when we do procedures.
If you were the king of the forest and you had your druthers, would you tell people who are experiencing more long-term back pain that they ought to maybe elect a procedure earlier? Or do you think it's better to wait until there's a lot more going on?
You should always wait as long as you can tolerate it before you undergo a surgical intervention for back problems. And the reason for that, the surgeries that we do can be very effective in treating back pain. We can also create other problems. Whenever we stabilize a part of the spine with a fusion procedure, we put stress on the levels above or below where that specific fusion is performed. That then can set patients up for additional surgery down the line. I believe that it's very important to try to exhaust all conservative treatments first because I think that gives the patient the best long-term results in terms of the overall health of their back. Although surgery is effective in the right patients, there are some downsides to doing surgery, and particularly if it's done in a prophylactic fashion.
So then back to the older people, would you say that in general, now that we are all aging successfully, or many of us are aging successfully into problems like this, that outcomes are generally good?
Because of a lot of advances in medicine and related to the surgery, that the outcomes are definitely improving. It doesn't necessarily mean that all of the outcomes are good. Not only are our surgical techniques advancing, but also things like critical care of these patients after surgery and the anesthetic care of these patients make it a lot easier for us to consider operating on someone in their 80s or even 90s nowadays. I remember when I was a resident, we used to get called from the emergency room, and a patient was in the emergency room and they said it was an 80-year-old patient. And we almost said to ourselves, look, you know, it's not even a surgical candidate. Nowadays, it's really not uncommon to consider surgery. And just a week or two ago, did a lumbar spine fusion on a woman who was 84 years old, and she did very well. I think it's a combination of improvements, not only in the surgical technique, but in other areas of medicine that allow us to do that.
But once again, I would say a very good argument for coming to a place that offers the constellation of care.
When you have all of the ancillary features of a hospital like Johns Hopkins, you really have experts in all the areas of care. And yes, there might be a fantastic spine surgeon in the community, but does that surgeon have all of the really top-notch anesthesiologists and critical care physicians and even internal medicine physicians to manage some of the medical issues that some of these complicated patients and elderly patients bring with them?
Excellent. Thank you so very much.
You're welcome.